Hey everyone, we want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all over print button downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They of course have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts, they do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
Hello there, and welcome to Thank the Maker, a podcast about heroes, princesses, scoundrels, hokey religions, ancient weapons, and all things Star Wars. I'm Adam Russell.
Hey guys, I'm Ryan Key.
My name is Nick Ganbarian.
Hey, it's Mike Forrester, and we are about to do something very fun on this podcast. But someone had an even more fun day. Let's just get it out of the way, Adam. Go ahead. Tell us what you did today.
Dude.
Did you do anything fun?
I did. You know, sometimes dreams really do come true.
I mean, listening to this music and I'm hearing you say that, it is making me emotional, to be honest.
So, friend of the podcast, Kate Sabaker of Tested, Adam Savage's Tested, and Tippett Studio, Phil Tippett being the legendary model maker and stop motion animator who goes all the way back to the beginning of Star Wars.
Did he make that?
Yes, right behind you.
He made that.
I can't see it, but probably yes.
I think he made that.
It's the Tauntaun. Yes, he did.
Kate took me to the Tested office, Adam Savage's cave, and Phil Tippett's studio. And I got to tour those places and hang out and see like some of the coolest shit I've ever seen in my life. Got to hang out with Adam Savage and just talk shop in his shop. Hung out with Norm from Tested as well. It was a hell of a day.
When are they coming on the podcast?
Just going to say they're coming on the pod. When? Do your job, Adam.
I can't imagine Phil Tippett ever being on a podcast. But maybe one day Adam will be on Armor Party. That would be ideal.
Let's do an Armor Party episode of Thank the Maker featuring Adam Savage.
Yeah, a little collab episode, bro.
Collabo, little network collab.
Yep, I'm into it.
Yeah, it was crazy. Also, last week, since we haven't been on since this happened, Zach the Maker, friend of the pod, friend of Mosh Eisley and everything, friend of ours,
right?
Who is in the Air Force, took us on a tour to Luke Air Force Base, I think it is, outside of Phoenix. And we got to get really up close and personal with F-35s, saw F-16s, watch F-35s take off on the runway. And they were just
very loud,
going for it. Got to actually sit in F-16 simulator, do a dogfight, a bombing run, take off and land the whole nine yards. Josh and Ryan from my band went with me, and we felt the need for speed and we did the damn thing. And
you went ballistic with Benny Benjamin.
So shout out to everyone who helped facilitate this. Everyone at the Air Force Base too. Hung out with some pilots who were fans of my band. They came to the show. Kate came to the show last night and or the night before last, whatever. I don't know. Time's an illusion. We played in Sacramento. And thank you to my wife for letting me just go around the country and spend all this extra money on flights and hotels and everything to go on these adventures while she's at home and our dog is pissing on a space heater and making the whole house smell like burning piss.
That is adulthood in a sentence. Remember how today you said, check out this pod. You need to listen to this pod, specifically this segment.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is 8 months pregnant. I didn't listen to that.
She's pregnant, man. She's pretty pregnant, dude. That's pretty pregnant.
It's not her fault. She didn't do anything today to make me not have time to listen to it. But our house is just a wasteland of preparing for parenthood.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
And I was telling you guys before we got on, I was really excited because I have this new studio. If you're watching us here on YouTube, this is my new space. It's the coolest space I've ever had. I built it from the ground up. It's freaking glorious, if I'm being honest. It's really unbelievable that I'm sitting in this space. But I have a child on the way, my first child, and all I wanted to do, or all I want to do, is watch this film that's on behind me on this giant, super comfy sectional that you may see in pieces behind me. So what happened is I ordered a sectional to go up here, and this is an addition onto my, that my house was built in 1957. So we've been remodeling and do, you know, the couch that I, the sectional I ordered, the short side came upstairs, but the long side would not make, would not come up the new stairway that we built to get up here.
Pivot.
It turns and it's really small. So
chainsaw it in half.
So small. And so it wouldn't go up there. So I had to order, the movers actually were like, you know, people make modular sectionals, you know, like they one seat at a time. So I looked into that. I found one. I got it. In the new post-COVID world, as you know, when you order something, it's basically like someday you'll get this. That's your shipping estimate.
But we need your money now, though. We need your money right now.
Yes. That's your shipping estimate is before you die. That's the shipping estimate. Right. And so I was like, you know what's going to happen is this couch is going to show up like on the eve that my wife goes into labor, and I'm not going to, like, I'm not just not going to get one night to like vibe out in here watching a movie at full volume, you know, in this, the new studio theater room. Then I got an email 2 days ago, your couch is coming on Wednesday. Yes. I'm so excited, you know, game changer. It shows up and four of the legs are missing.
What do you need those for? You don't need those.
Put it right on the ground. College style.
So that's what I was doing all day. And that's why I didn't listen to the podcast. You're welcome.
But you're here now, baby. You're here now.
You made it.
I'm here now.
Ooh, and do we have a show tonight?
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped on this.
Yeah, this is going to be fun.
This is fun. I like, we've been very deep in the Star Wars stories that are written by actual Star Wars people. Right. And now we get to sort of have fun and do our own thing.
Yeah, rather than, you know, speculating all the time and theorizing and basing our channel and our podcast around that, we try to avoid that, you know, but tonight we get to have fun because we're not speculating. We're just going to create things out of whole cloth, whether it's it's an idea from scratch or taking an idea that maybe is on paper somewhere and pitching the idea of how to bring that to screen. It's going to be fun
because we're capable, first of all. And we're doing what the kids call manifesting.
Yes.
Yes.
One of us are going to get picked. We're getting the grand prize. Kathleen Kennedy is going to show up like, what was it? Publishers Clearinghouse. Remember in the 80s?
With
the big check.
Yeah.
Kathleen Kennedy is going to be like, help me ruin Star Wars. Let's do this.
And I'm going to be like, replace every male character with whoever the latest boogeyman for insecure white dudes is. Let's do it, right?
Yeah, she's here to ruin our lives. That's her mission statement.
That's right. Today, so we got inspired by a couple of other of our friends' podcasts to do this idea of like this pitch, right? So like it's been a while since the draft, which is coming up soon for us.
Ooh,
it's been a while since we've been able to have a you know, a little death match between each other. And we've noticed a couple other podcasts kind of do this idea of like a pitch, right? All of us have an elevator pitch. We're going to be time locked, so no one rambles or you have to choose exactly what you want to put in the pitch. You're running out of time, right? So what we decided was doing, what's the name?
I'm so unprepared. I'm just so unprepared.
You're ready, Ryan. We called it Hit or Miss, the pitch of Star Wars, right? Which is, I told Adam, this is a sports reference. He didn't get it. But what we're going to do is we're actually going to pitch an idea for a feature film or a miniseries in a certain amount of time. And what we had to do was pick. Did we all pick a title? Hopefully.
I have a title that's not as good as another
title.
All
right. So this is a great start right here.
Yeah, I love mine. Okay, I love
as long as I don't
title.
Have to go first, I'll come up with a title.
I'm really unprepared, so I'll go first if you want.
Yeah, do it.
I'll be a complete dumpster fire and you'll be like, God, that was terrible and you took way too long and then you nail it.
So we've got the title of the film. We've got the what's called like a treatment or overall pitch of the actual story. And we've got the director and then a couple casting points, maybe if you got key moments, whatever. The point is we're on the Shark Tank of Lucasfilm and we're pitching this idea. And then you guys got to tell us which one you think is the most viable.
You are the Mark Cuban.
That's right.
And those other people.
The guy from FUBU.
So what, I have 5 minutes?
Yeah, ish.
Yeah, you know, so we'll start the clock.
All right.
You could do that thing that politicians do where, what did they say? Like, I would like to reclaim my time.
Yeah.
If we start talking, you could reclaim your time.
I was interrupted.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I just should have, I needed more time to like actually write, you know, like do some bullet points.
Well, you were farting around with that couch, man. I mean, come on.
Dude, more than the couch. It's the baby verse here. You know what I mean?
I'm well aware. I know how that goes.
I know,
and
you know, are.
And you think you've got it once you've unpacked all the stuff, it just never goes away. It just changes.
Recycling is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Our house, if you drive by, if you're not into this kind of thing, you would just be like, look at those capitalist consumer. Yeah.
They had to get another recycling truck just for your house.
Because there is just two chest high stacks of boxes. And it's been that way for like the last 4 weeks straight.
Yeah. I haven't even sent you a gift.
It just never ends.
Okay.
Never ends. All right. But we're close. We are actually close.
It's going to be great. We're all going to come there when your wife goes in, honest, we're all going to come too, which is going to be great.
But I did not have time to do like a bullet point pitch for Kathleen Kennedy on my Star Wars series. Mine's a series.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
Which is why I asked in the text thread if that was okay today, because I thought this is going to work better as a series, but
why not?
I would need to tighten it up. But my pitch includes a solid team to make a series.
Okay. All right. Well, let's hit it from the top. Timeline, plot, director, casting, and so on.
Are we starting?
Sure.
YouTube is ready. All right. And Ryan Key, first pitch of the night, starting now.
All right. I would like to pitch Star Wars Scavengers. I'm going to start in 12 BBY with the birth of Dathan, who is son of Palpatine, who wasn't actually named Dathan. He didn't have a name, but he was sort of raised by a Sith Eternal who took a liking to him after Palps was like, that my son doesn't have the Force, but I want to keep him alive because I might need his bloodline later. So also let me say, in the group thread, I asked about the guidelines for this. What I'm pitching for a show has been written by someone else. This is not like a unique and original brainchild of mine naming new characters and new storyline. This is a story that is out there and is canon, but I think should be made into a show. So I would like to hire Tony Gilroy and the Rogue One Andor crew, because I think it is extremely important to bring people our age who were obsessed with and loved and rated highly Andor and Rogue One into the sequel trilogy, to provide them with some backstory and some things that enrich and help build up and make the sequels more important and went to them. And when you go back and you read this stuff and you hear this stuff about, retconned or not, whatever you want to call it, it's amazing stuff. So basically my idea is it flashbacks to Exegol and his childhood? I don't know. Maybe the first episode is just straight up Exegol and infant Dathan is born, and we're sort of seeing the Sith Eternal, the cloners, and the, you know, all of the other strand cast clones like in tanks everywhere, whatever, but he's born and Palps comes, you know, Palps is somehow there in some form and is able to, you know, or is not able to connect with him through the Force, and basically shuns him, which the story goes is what he did. So he was raised by the dude's name was Dathan that like kind of raised him up, but he has a first name.
And he took the name of the dude who raised him, right?
Simyong. S-Y-M-E-O-N-G.
Simyong?
Simyong. Okay. Simyong, something like that. That is the Sith loyalist that sort of took him under his wing and raised him up and helped him escape. He actually escaped on a ship that Vader came to Exegol to sort of meet with Palpatine, if I'm recalling that correctly in the story. I know, and Palpatine wasn't like there in the flesh at that time, but his essence, you know. Anyways, he gets away. Hidden with this, he had some kind of thing with a Sith Eternal crest on it that helped him be invisible, be hidden and shrouded by the dark side to hide so no one could know he was on the ship. Cool stuff.
Weird.
Gets away, ends up on Jakku, marries a woman named Mirian, I think is her name. And in the show, I would love to show them being filthy junk traders, right? Like doing exactly what Rey did. Tearing apart the Star Destroyers and whatever else is there for them to trade with Onkar Plot, who they end up inevitably leaving Rey. But another big part of the, okay, I've got a minute and 15. Another big part of the series that I think would be so sick is following Ochi Bastoon across the galaxy hunting for Rey. And there can be some really cool timeline stuff that moves around in this, you know, in this story that doesn't have to go in order in any way, shape, or form. It could be all over the place with the right writers and producers. I think you could make a through line that really makes sense. But the end of this thing, after Dathan and Mirian, is it Mirian or Miriam?
Miramir, I want to say.
Miramir, that's it. Miramir. After they are killed by Ochi, he basically packs their bodies up and sends them out into space, right? And I want to say Lando and R2 find the bodies.
What?
And I like it. Yes. And I like, as an ending to the series, you know, like that final scene, I think there could be also, by the way, backtrack a little bit. There could be a really cool, from a production standpoint, there's a this idea to me has a lot of Obi-Wan series vibe to it. Yeah. Like the hunt, the Inquisitor's hunting, Ochi is hunting. But I think the vibe of it staying in that Rogue One and or the place where fans our age who are so butthurt about the sequels felt so at home would make a lot of sense. But that final moment, you know, if it's going to be Lando and R2 finding their bodies and laying them to rest sort of thing, but also experiencing that final moment with young Rey and Unkar Plot on Jakku, like, and sort of like, that's it. This isn't like a multi-season thing. This is a limited series that ends with, now we know the story of Rey's parents. And I think it brings together both aspects of Rian Johnson wanting to say your parents are nobodies and J.J. Abrams wanting to say there's something more important here. And they can be nobodies and also be
somebody,
also have this lineage and this heritage, right? So yeah, I just want to see a grimy, gritty story, because that story is grimy and gritty. It's dark and like there's murder. They're literally stabbed to death on a spaceship. Like, so I want to see a gritty Andor Rogue One-esque story that tells us Dathan's story and how, you know, Rey's origin through the eyes of her parents.
I like that.
I want it.
I like it. All right, now we get a couple minutes to ask questions. Ryan is having a baby, so he got one extra minute. Nick, you're not going to get that. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
All right. So here's my question for you. You've got a good story here that's deep. It's vast. Who are you casting as your main leads, Frankie?
Well, Ochi, I don't know, because he would be an alien species, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, is Serkis overused in Star Wars now that he's been in Star Wars, or can he do the voice of Ochi?
I mean, that's the go-to answer, of course.
That's a question for Andy Serkis, to be honest.
Because it would just be voiceover, basically. You know, that would all be voiceover. But maybe, you know right. what? You know what? No. I am going to die on the hill with Kathleen and the crew if my pitch gets picked up, that James Arnold Taylor gets the gig of doing voiceover in live action for the first time.
I was about to say, why not? I mean, and the parents are already cast because they were in the flashback.
Yes. I think we would use the actor and actress that played her parents on the ship with Ochi in Rise of Skywalker. Palps obviously is Palps. We gotta get this made, by the way.
Yeah.
The clock's ticking.
Yo, do we have a de-aged Lando, or do we, or is it
somewhat? Yes, because
or do we?
This would be it. It's not far enough back to be.
Yeah, you make Donald older. You don't de-age.
Yeah, exactly what you do. That's exactly what you do. And Kathleen, if you're listening to me, what an incredible tie-in to the Lando film or series or whatever it is. Like, let's get some more Lando. I'm looking for it. But because I read it today quickly, trying to get ready for this half-assed as I do. Hold on.
Well, dude, while you're trying to find it, this could be something that gets made in 10 or 15 years when Donald Glover is older and it's not such a stretch.
Right.
You know?
The crate was found by Lando and R2-D2, who recovered their bodies and took them to the frozen world of Neftali, where they buried them together with the help of Luke Skywalker and Komat. I don't know who Komad is.
Was it a droid?
Man, I don't know.
I read that book and I'm hanging on. It might be a droid.
No, a human female who was a former member of the Acolytes and beyond.
Yeah, I'm mistaking it.
Either way, Luke is there.
Yeah.
At the burial. I mean,
dude, when you have time,
this has to get made.
Read that Shadow of the Sith book for sure.
Yeah.
When you have time.
That's where a lot of this comes from, right?
Yeah. You will love it. It's so good. I wish I remembered any of it.
Lando, R2, and Luke in a final scene burying Rey's parents as we see her like learning to be a scavenger at the very end. Like, you know, maybe the final scene is her with her like little arm wraps like far enough ahead. Like maybe it skips forward because obviously they were probably killed while she was an infant. But
wait, so in the book, does Luke meet her as like a toddler or whatever?
No, he's just there for the burial.
Okay.
I don't think
it says that. Yeah, it says that the crate containing their bodies, Dathan and Miramir, the crate containing their body was found by Lando and R2.
Okay, found. Got it.
They recovered their bodies and took them to the frozen world of Naftali, where they buried them together with the help of Luke Skywalker.
So ending with that scene and then cut to her at the spaceport on Jakku, you know, away from them.
And the misdirection that sent Ochi to Passana was her mom, Miramir, with the beads.
Mm.
She had the beads on, so he thought that's where they were from.
Nice. I'm on board for this.
Green lit.
Yeah, there's a lot of... And, dude, Star Wars scavengers. It's just, come on.
Yeah.
Sick. Some merch heaven.
I like it.
Let's go.
Hey, everyone. We want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all-over print button-downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They, of course, have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts, they do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
Okay.
Who's next? Nick?
Nick?
Me?
Come on, dude.
Nicolas.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Are we ready to do this?
All right, you're ready? Okay.
The
so
pitch
my
is
main
on,
characters.
Just, wait.
I'm
you
going.
Just, you just walked in. We're going to hit start.
I ripped my shirt
you're
off.
Good. Go ahead. Yeah.
My main characters are a new Jedi Order of Rey, Finn, Ezra, Sabine, Jason Syndulla, and the elder of the group, Ahsoka Tano. The council now refers to light side force users as Skywalkers. I'm ham-fisting that in. I want that to happen.
Yeah.
The era is obviously post-sequel, but it's also post whatever movie is coming out. So post-new Jedi Order movie. I'm writing the sequel to it already.
Post-Rey movie.
Yeah. So the plot... Leader of the Order, Rey, seeks out an extremely Force-sensitive Jedi Order holdout named Grogu, who has been raised as a Mandalorian by his adoptive father, Din Djarin. Simultaneously, there's a rise in Mandalorian purists called the Hound, who cite Death Watch as an influence, but feel like Death Watch did not go far enough in sparking the ancient Mandalorian ways. Their leader shows some training in the Force, perhaps an apprentice of sorts, but how? Dun, dun, dun. So Din, obviously, at this point is an elder Mandalorian on Nevarro, which has been made a Mandalorian stronghold for decades. And he is revered as a reluctant leader as the culture, Mandalorian culture there flourishes. So the Hounds wind up abducting Din, demanding that all Mandalorians form one clan and try to seize power from the New Republic. That's a Futurama Easter egg right there. during a rescue attempt by a reckless and outmatched Grogu, Din sacrifices his life to help Grogu escape, but to no avail. Grogu is captured by the leader of the Hounds. In captivity, Grogu is met by the Grand Master of the Hounds, someone whose power is fueled by the dark side, Shin Hati. of House Skull, named after her former master. Shin vows to train Grogu, whether he accepts willingly or is forced. And because of Din's death, there is a hint of fear and loss in Grogu after Din died, planting a seed for a turn from Grogu.
Oh, my.
Dude. Mm. This is sick.
See, he typed his up. He's ready to roll. I was looking at Wikipedia just like...
I mean, he's...
Got, he was done in 2.5 minutes, and the show got picked up.
This is crazy. Wild.
Yeah, the rest of the elevator ride.
And the... Wait, no.
Nailed it.
Now, who is directing? We already say this?
Okay, my... Here's
this because is a film?
This is a film, so I'm going... I think the Russo brothers will do great.
Oh,
so I'm going Russo pick, brothers.
Dude. Damn.
Good pick. All right. Okay.
Yeah. And I think my working title is the Hounds of Hati. Yeah.
All right.
Well, right.
Those are my notes. Email me if you want to pick this movie up.
Okay.
My folks. Okay. My people.
This is very good. I like this. This got all the strategy of Disney right here. We take all the hottest people, all the hottest characters, mash them up into a movie. I mean, this seems plausible to me.
So this is what year? Like you say they're all the council. Are they like elders? Is like Rey in her 70s? What are we talking about here?
No, I think it's pretty soon after this movie gets made. You know, like I think that after the actual movie gets made, whatever the new Jedi Order is, I see that as her kind of talking all those aforementioned Finn, Sabine, like into being a group, and Grogu is the holdout. So she's trying to get Grogu to come. So no, they're all like... younger.
Okay, I'm 40s. Sitting across the table from you. I'm sitting across the table from you. I'm a producer, executive producer. Disney. Are you open to the idea of having Stephen Knight write this film as well?
What has Stephen Knight done?
He's writing the Rey film.
Oh, sure.
Peaky Blinders. Writer, creator.
I want continuity. So
okay.
Yeah.
Because in essence, in theory, this is a continuation of whatever we're going to see.
Right? Yep. So, I love
assuming it. He nails that.
Yeah.
I think he should write it.
I know I've said it on the podcast before, but to refresh for anyone new or anyone who's forgot, I do think that the sickest thing to do, which would put Star Wars on top forever, is to do what they did with Vader and introducing Anakin later, and Anakin turned into Vader, was to introduce Grogu first, and over the course of like 2 decades or like 15 years, watch the real time like fall of Grogu into a dark side, you know, and then the redemption. Like literally just do the original, like the first 6 movies over the course of 20
Dude,
years
in
series, you know?
It is not crazy to think that was actually the spark in the brain of Jon Favreau at the very beginning to say like, I want to create a character that is super force sensitive in a time where there are no Jedi that takes us on this ride again, you know? And then he brainstormed and it was like, well, what if it's, baby Yoda, like however they call it back then. But like, I don't think it's crazy to think that that's how that went down or that's the vision.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, this is 30 years at least, right? So more like 40 years since The Mandalorian. So
I mean, I think they're saying, so like Din's going to be 70, 80. I want to say that Rey movie is 10 years after. Did they say it was 10 years after Rise of Skywalker?
I don't remember.
They definitely said it gave a time frame.
Yeah.
So even that... Rey's only going to be in her 30s or so, you know? So, like, I think, and Ezra and Sabine are younger than that. Ahsoka, who knows? But, you know, they got to work on how Tigruta's age.
By then, Ezra and Sabine are old.
Yeah, but I'm saying they're younger than Rey, though.
No.
Right?
They're way older than
Rey. No. I'm thinking backwards. Yep. Either way, whatever.
So, either way, what I'm getting at is that Grogu's, like, an adolescent, or, like, he's, like, a teen...
Yeah.
Ish in development, right? So he's speaking, he's doing stuff, he's out there causing trouble, you know, getting into shit, you know, a young little arrogant, you know, force sensitive Mandalorian, right?
Yep. No guidelines, you know, like no Jedi order. He just has super wicked power, yo. But
always wicked smart.
Yeah, Din Djarin has a Boston accent too.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, sure. I did get that. He went to Harvard.
I like this a lot.
Yeah, this is good. Is this a risk? Do we judge this? Is Disney going to take a risk? Is this a risk?
I mean, with all those good guys in there, plus Grogu, plus like the death of Din, which has to happen eventually.
It's got to happen. You're right.
Yeah. Right. You need a bad guy, you know, like you need a bad guy.
So how prominent are like the New Republic and new Jedi Order and Jedi Council characters in this? Or is it focused more on Grogu and Shin? Because that's a big cast. That's a huge ensemble.
I think it's more Grogu, Shin, because I think that you get to Grogu by Rey not like really accepting, if she's the leader of the order there, her not accepting that Grogu doesn't want to come join.
Yeah.
So I think it's more Grogu versus Shin.
Let's talk about a Rey and Shin showdown, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Badass.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
All right.
Discord is saying that and Jason specifically and Nicole Rourke both said the new Jedi Order movie is supposed to be 15 years after Rise of Skywalker.
You said 15?
15
years.
15. Yeah.
Nice.
All right.
Age.
So Rey's like mid-30s, late-30s?
Probably, right?
Right. Okay. That's
yeah, because the whole sequel trilogy is a year or two, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So she's 21 there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
It'll have actually
been 30 in real life now, right?
Right.
Daisy Ridley's 30 years old.
Something like that, yeah.
29 and 30.
So it will have actually been 15 years from when we first saw her in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, interesting.
Mm.
Sweet.
Wow.
All right, Mike, you go next. What do you think?
Are we ready? Nick, bring up my stopwatch here. I'm going to need it.
Let's do it.
Okay. Actually, not. I've got this thing. This is packaged in a bow. I want to make sure.
I'm ready to get totally shown up twice in a row here.
I'm ready. I'm ready to ride that elevator, and I assume that we're...
I'm hitting start. You ready?
Are we? Hold on. Is this a thing where like one of these is actually getting picked by Discord or something? Like one?
Yeah, they're going to vote.
Is this an actual competition?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm
yeah, we're going to make a movie poster for it and everything.
I'm taking my lunchbox and I'm going home.
Don't worry. Somehow the Discord's going to win. They're going to be like, we'd like our pitch better.
Yeah.
I'm still mad. The Discord hive mind is smarter than you guys.
I'm still mad about losing the draft.
That's true. That's a good point. so I think the other thing is that we also wanted to note that if we are very aware that us four gentlemen on this podcast are not the most indulgent of readers, right? So if there are any like crossover points or a storyline that seems similar to something, please shout it from the rooftops so that eventually when we get around to reading books that aren't the High Republic, at least for me, I would...
Yeah, I have 6 Dune books to read. They're really long.
Yeah, see,
so it's like, going to be a... It's going to be a long time.
That baby sleeps a lot for the first couple of months. So you're just going to have baby here and then just book right here. And that's good. That's what you want. If there's any storylines from any books or any comics or something like that, a lot of this stuff has been fleshed out, but we'd love to hear about it. So please do let us know. Okay. We ready? We ready to do this?
You ready? I'm going to count you down from 3. You ready?
Yeah. Okay. The pitch is ready.
You ready? 3, 2, 1.
Introducing The Zeta Squadron, A Star Wars Story. All right?
Nice.
In the time of the New Republic, yes, Nick, I'm with you on this, Captain Carson Teva is rebuilding a strike team of new starfighter pilots after the fall of the Empire. Marked exclusively by their gold and blue colors, this training team of young hotshots fly an assortment of classic rebellion ships like the X-A and B-Wings. To prepare them for anything, Captain Teva launches them from 2 Republic cruisers out of range to teach them to work with minimal support and to assess and adapt to any potential threats. The flight crew is led by Lieutenant Paulson Teak, the reserved, reluctant, slightly hesitant pilot who prefers the skies to the simulators, and though he's seen little action, he's lost many more to the dangerous air that can swirl around decades of conflict. On their latest training mission, Curiosity gets the squadron to investigate an odd power signature from a supposedly evacuated base on the planet Lanara. Chaos erupts as the squadron is attacked by the Gorgara, a band of vicious pirates composed of defected warriors and derelicts from the fall of the Empire's collapse. The leader of these violent raptors is the infamous Rayne Darrow, this former Mandalorian sharpshooter who leads who pilots a blood red fang fighter thought to be only a ghost story to warn fresh pilots not to be too confident on their missions. In recent years, Darrow has everything he needs to rebuild his threat to the galaxy after commandeering an Imperial naval base outfitted with TIE fighters, interceptors, and one rare advanced warfighter, the terrifying TIE Defender. After narrowly escaping from the surprise attack, Lieutenant Teague finds a stroke of luck in a small outpost on the planet's surface, allowing them to form a plan to not only escape against the pirates, but to strike a blow, sending a message that the New Republic is just as fierce and deadly as the spirit of the previous rebellion. Will Lieutenant Teague prove he's ready to lead this band of new pilots to victory? This is the story of the Zeta Squadron.
All right.
Sweet. Are we going to do this?
Turn and burn.
Okay. So think chemistry and victory of a heist movie, right? We've got our classic moments of being like, we got to figure out how to get our damaged ships back up into the sky, what we can do to fly. We've got action of, in the spirit of the mid-2000s, early 2000s, like OG couple first Fast and the Furious movies, which were ton of fun, popcorn movies. I feel like we need that again. And the
Transformers,
the story of with Shia LaBeouf, Megan Fox, all of the hits, right? The behind
lots
enemy
of lens flares.
Yeah, lots of lens flares. Behind enemy lines feel of the final act of Top Gun Maverick. And I'm thinking for a director, F. Gary Gray, who did The Italian Job, Fate of the Furious, Straight Outta Compton, Friday, Men in Black International, Law Abiding Citizen. Like, he's done action and he's done wonkiness and he's got a pretty wide range. But I just feel like there's something about some of those movies that were just cheesy enough that are like kind of where Star Wars needs to get back on track to being like great popcorn. Especially this one's like not as story. It's a light story, but it's a little more popcorn-y. And I feel like that's why we all love Top Gun Maverick so much. So for cast, I'm thinking obviously our dude, Paulie, reprising his role as Captain Carson Teva, for Lieutenant Paulson Teague, right? Which is a Beastie Boys shout out. This is the way we name. That's the name, way we name characters. For instead of Paul's Boutique, we have Paulson Teague. Nice. I'm thinking Yahya Abdul-Mateen, who was Dr. Manhattan in the HBO Watchmen series. He was also Black Manta. He crushes in pretty much everything I've ever seen him in. I'm thinking for some of the pilots.
30 seconds on the clock, Mike Forrester.
Okay. For pilots, I'm thinking Steven Yeun. I'm thinking Emma D'Arcy from House of the Dragon, Jazz Sinclair, Gen V. Like, these are all like younger-ish pilots who like would totally gel as like, you know, a different group. And for Darrow, thinking either two actors. One, of course, would be Paddy Considine, who is King Viserys of House of the Dragon, or Paul Anderson, Arthur Shelby of Peaky Blinders. So I'm thinking some key moments. Arthur Shelby. I'm thinking the team is comprised of a mixed bag of species. Mostly I'm thinking like, you know, Mirlands, but I'm also thinking mostly humanoid, but also like a Roidian or a Duros would serve as like the Groot of the group. Rain Darrow flies a Fang fighter, and obviously in Blood Red would be really sick because it's like kind of classic like Red Baron vibe. And I'm thinking that one of the Republic cruisers is like totally blown to bits so that Carson has to leave and basically like cuts off comms behind enemy lines. And then I'm thinking the final scene after the victory, a new set of pilots walks in eager to fly. Carson asks Teague if he's ready to suit up again. A young pilot jumps in and says, I wish I would have had the one to had the chance to take down Rain Darrow. Carson starts laughing and says, what's your name, kid? And he says, Dameron, sir. My name is Poe Dameron.
No.
Right? So that's...
I love
so
it.
That's how, it around. That's how I'm thinking we would do it. That is the... that's the Zeta Squadron.
I love
maybe.
It.
I'm into it.
Love it.
You I'm really...
In 10 seconds over, Mike.
I went 10... Oh,
1 minute and 10 seconds.
A minute and 10 seconds.
Bullshit.
Hey, can I go back and just give some credit where credit's due to my like completely unorganized and not typed up pitch, which would never get picked up because you can't go into a room and just be like, So I think maybe if you had this one person, which is what I did, Billy Howell, who is credited as Ray's father because he didn't get a name until the novel was written after. But Billy Howell and then Jodie Comer as Ray's mother. Miramir? Is that
Miramar?
Yeah. So cool thing. Jodie Comer, amazing role. If you have not seen this film, she played Marguerite de Carrouge. Yeah, Marguerite de Carrouge in The Last Duel. Starring Adam Driver and Matt Damon. Yeah. Freaking incredible film. If you're into like, it's medieval shit without dragons and magic. You might like it.
I'll mess with that.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, it's really good and it's based on a true story. But anyways, I did not realize that she was in that film and she's like incredible in that movie. So absolutely hired. Like, I know we would get an incredible performance out of her.
Sick.
So let's make this show.
I have one update too to mine. I will be an actor in this playing Shin Hati's love interest.
Just to get the smooch.
I could die like right after. It's fine.
Right. She stabs you with her lightsaber. You're like, oh, it's fine.
Just get Nick an on-screen smooch with Shin and he's good to go.
All right.
Adam.
My turn.
He's been waiting for this.
I've heard this pitch before and it took about 3 hours. So 5 minutes is going to be really interesting.
We were tired.
Nick, you got the clock? What are we doing?
Let's just let it roll, man.
All right. Here's.
Are you gonna give the name of the name?
No.
Too much?
I don't want to go too in detail.
Okay.
More than a plot, I'm going to give you the concept because it's the concept that I think is the hook more than anything.
Well, I obviously won't give it away, but just for those of you out there, I know this story pretty intimately and the lead character who is the core of the whole concept has the sickest Star Wars name and Adam came up with
dude.
It. But we're not going to get to hear
and
it.
And I thought of something earlier, too, for the sibling that is genius. I'll tell you later.
Okay, I'm ready for this. So, Nick, start it up.
Have you guys heard this? Nick, Mike, have you heard this before? Has he pitched this thing to you before?
Yes.
I feel like yes.
Like in depth?
I think I've verbally diarrheaed this to all parties involved here. All right.
Correct.
That's so good.
So this is admittedly kind of redundant and pointless at this juncture because... This is an idea that that's been bouncing around in my head. I've been taking notes for a couple years now. It's a Jedi origin story, right? Obviously, we're going to get that with James Mangold's written and directed forthcoming Dawn of the Jedi, right? Is that what it's called, or is that what the era is?
It's the yours is the Jedi origin story.
Hey,
the quintessential.
I think it's a good idea. Here's the other thing: the Force knows no bounds. It always was. It always will be. It doesn't necessarily have to have a singular origin story for Force wielders. You know,
we're going to different galaxies now.
Yeah,
it could be whatever.
Yeah. So in theory, the Force is being discovered and awakened by all different peoples everywhere across the universe, and it's like a convergent evolution thing. You know, so it doesn't have to be one thing. So I feel like this story could still be told.
Okay.
All right. Timeline. I'm going to say a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away because it's going to be tens of thousands of years back.
Does work.
I don't think it's necessary to make it specific. I'll go ahead and say at the top, the only director that I can think of that would get the tone of this right is Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking like...
I'm in.
Denis.
Classic though, to get the Dune director to come over and do Star Wars. I mean, that's classic
Lucas's.
Classic Neeson's. Like, it's just, it's going to work. It's
going to work. Casting, I want...
He's going to do it.
I want... as many unknown actors as possible. I'm sure there are plenty of actors who are coming up that I don't know anything about, so I'm not even going to try with that.
Right.
And maybe at the end of this, you guys can throw out some ideas if you...
I have one.
Okay.
I have one. I have a really good one.
The entire cast of the new Mean Girls.
So, Jedi origin story. So, again, conceptually, I'm gonna pitch this. So, it's set in a single solar system. No... hyperspace travel, no interstellar travel at all, right? One solar system, two planets. The origin of this two dual inhabitants system here is there was, you know, imagine Earth. I'll kind of use, instead of specifics and names and everything, I'm just going to kind of analogize Earth And let's say, like, imagine Mars is a planet that we settle at some point, right? Imagine the space race.
He's got to be at like 5 minutes already, doesn't he?
A lot of qualifiers at the top.
Halfway there.
All right.
Okay.
So imagine the space race never stopped, right? And somewhere late 21st century, we make it to another planet in the solar system. Say it's Mars, right? We start to colonize that planet. And then a massive solar event happens, like a coronal mass ejection that just knocks out the grids of both planets. So you've got thousands of people who have colonized this Mars-like planet, right? Everyone at home, the tens of billions of people are screwed there. So there's no longer any travel between these planets. This sets them back so far that, you know, because they have to completely rebuild their civilization, they're not thinking about the space travel thing and these colonies way deep in the solar system. So 1,000 years go by before they can make it back there. This is stuff that would be in the crawl, I assume, right? So we establish that we have these two planets, and it's been so long that the people on the Earth-like planet almost consider these, the colonists from 1,000 years ago, almost a different species. They're subhuman to them, right? But in the meantime, you know, there's all this infrastructure, everything else that on the Earth-like planet, they've been able to pick up the pieces a little faster, but everyone on the other planet, they kind of started over. They have this brand new culture. They've become sort of an ancient society. There's a royal family. There's, you know, they're very connected to the Force. They've discovered this thing about their planet. They haven't been communicating with the other planet. They've become Force sensitive because this planet has a heart of Kyber, right? This planet also is tidally locked. So for anyone who doesn't know what that means, it means the planet doesn't rotate. Gravity has stopped the rotation. So one side is constantly baked by the sun. The other side is constantly in darkness. It's frozen. But there's a Goldilocks zone around a perimeter that has beautiful, lush weather climate and landscapes and everything. This is where these people survive. And that dichotomy between the burning light side and the freezing dark side informs their view of the Force. And it's become part of their mythology. So that, like, that one thing is absolutely key there. It's a more balanced view of the Force. There really is no light or dark side so much. The main characters will be the daughter of the royal family, so to speak, on this tidally locked planet, and her brother, prince and princess. And then coming from the Earth planet, the son of a wealthy former military, imperialist, capitalist piece of shit, right? And the idea is that now that they're back up and running with the space program, they've gone back to increase relations, and they're realizing that there's something there, an energy source that they may be able to exploit, because they need to conquer interstellar travel, because they know that the sun is dying. They know that there's going to be another solar event that's going to wipe them out. They've been building this giant ship, trying to figure out how to power it to get the hell out, and they're realizing there's this energy in this crystal. Right? This is pre-coaxium and everything, right? So, you know, think of steam power and stuff like that, right? They're using Kyber for propulsion. The idea is that the son of this terrible piece of shit meets the daughter of the princess. He learns about the Force from her. The brother is also, he's very Force sensitive as well. There's this sort of triangle of romance and family and everything and distrust and all of these things. And I don't want to get into the, like, too deep into the story, but in the end, this will be the origin of the Jedi and the Sith, so to speak. Maybe not with those names. I have a bunch of language built in, like some characters and some planet names and things that could lead to the actual term Jedi. Don't want to go into that too deeply, but also we'll see the first lightsaber. So this man coming from the planet with all this technology, learning about Kyber crystals. He's actually the one who invents the lightsaber, because they use swords. I mean, think of swords, think of spears, think of like ancient Japanese type weapons, but with Kyber crystals in the hilt, sort of built into the hilt. So they're powerful weapons. They're more powerful, but they're not like enhanced or channeled in the way that technology does in a lightsaber.
Right.
But he brings this together. So it's kind of flipping everything, where this, you know, the origin of the Sith is very much about like exploiting this thing that they can't achieve, because they're approaching from a dark side perspective. I don't want to spoil too much because there's too much good shit.
It's like Dune meets Ferngully.
I've never seen Ferngully, but I believe you.
Okay.
And in the end, I'm thinking of this as a is potentially a trilogy, because this would end by faster than light travel being achieved. There's an enslaved people, there's deception, there's some crazy family twists and things like that. Since Dawn of the Jedi was taken, I'm thinking the trilogy is maybe called The Birth of an Order, or The Birth of the Order, and each film would have a different title. I mean, because nothing beats Dawn of the Jedi, to be honest.
That's pretty good. So we'd see the first ever Purrgil Riders.
I'm thinking, yeah, Purrgil would be in there at some point. Yeah.
Okay.
Really love the planet stuff. They're like fully cold side, fully light side.
Yeah, but like when you get into the parentage and stuff that you have thought out, like how she's born and...
One side is Ilum, one side is Arrakis.
The concubine shit, it's just so good, man. It's so good.
Shh, no spoilers.
Okay.
Very Dune though. Yeah. And you're not a big Dune guy. Right. So it's like, it just inherently that, but that's why these stories, I'm watching Foundation now.
Same.
And I've come to learn that Foundation is actually where it all comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Predates Dune.
Yes. And
Asimov,
but,
right?
But the,
Asimov, right?
And yeah. Yes. And the ideas obviously you can officially say that Frank Herbert and George Lucas took from this original concept and made their thing. But I also think that some of these ideas are just sort of like inherent sci-fi. Like it's not that Asimov thought of it first necessarily, but I am getting into the shit in Foundation where like moving things with your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, is a thing.
I'm
and like
almost at that spot pretty much.
And it's dude. And so that is straight up, you know, the first telling in popular culture of it's set 50,000 years in the future and it was written in the 40s. But I think it's interesting that you haven't read Dune. You weren't, you know, you've been thought of this long before the film came out. And a lot of, when you first told me about this idea, so many of the concepts do live more in the Dune world. Yeah, honestly.
I was like, dude, it's Paul Atreides, man. What's going on here?
Yes. Then the Star Wars. And I mean, it's all in there when you told me the original story. And like, yeah, I think that it's cool how the idea of the hero's journey just exists in this concrete way.
Yeah.
And in sci-fi, it's like so many of the ideas behind it are the same, even if they come from different minds.
Classic archetypes, dude. Oh, also the last thing I'll say is that...
You have casting. You got to talk about casting.
Well, before you guys, because you guys got to throw out some ideas. Before the origin of many of the Jedi principles, which were flawed out of the gate. You know, a Jedi shall know no anger, nor hatred, nor love, comes from this story. And it puts the dominoes in place for the eventual fall of the Jedi tens of thousands of years later. It's the kind of ending that if you don't understand the deeper concepts, it's like, oh, they won. But ultimately, they've been set up for failure, you know, with a flawed philosophy from jump. That's my pitch.
Your pitch, again, your pitch can't be done in 5 minutes. And I know the name of the lead.
Right now it says 12 minutes.
Okay, so Adam did 12 minutes. But I mean, he pitched a trilogy, so...
You did say it's a daughter, right? You said it's a female.
Right, yeah.
Right. So I vote that you cast Kaylee Spaney, who just played Priscilla Presley.
Oh, she's...
In
yeah.
Priscilla.
Okay.
Young, insanely talented, kind of, you know, not a huge... Priscilla's going to put her on the map, but not in like a Barbie way. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
I just saw the movie, so it's fresh on my mind.
Who does Ryan Gosling play?
But yeah, I feel like you're going to want an almost adolescent looking actor at the start, you know?
Yeah.
And she was amazing in this film. So like, I think she could bring some depth to the character of, I know the name, but I'm not going to tell you.
Nice.
Also, inspirations, I'm thinking, and also trying to avoid the tropes, yet still being inspired by The Last Samurai.
Sure.
You know, there's lots of stuff I have in there that is too similar to Avatar, because again, Avatar just borrows from all the same stuff.
Right.
Things I would have to work out, but...
Pocahontas.
Similar vibes of that type of a type of story.
Okay.
A little culture clash, a little bit of learning from each other. And
I want Jeremy Irons to be the father.
All right.
Oh, that's good. I like that. I love that. Watch anything with Jeremy Irons. Nick, do you think, let's speculate, Adam's character's name, what do you think his name is? It's a great Star Wars name. I'm going to go with Garazeb Aurelius.
I don't know.
A little Rebels joke for you guys.
Barry and Gann is the best.
Honestly, I like that too.
I can't wait for that to be a real thing.
That is such a good Star Wars name. It really is, man. Or even if you separated the two and left it in order, Gann Barian is also an amazing Star Wars name.
Good.
I was born a Star Wars.
The way it spelled everything. Incredible.
Yo, there's this actor. I don't know if you have room in any movie. There's this dude. I don't know if you guys ever watched this show called His Dark Materials. It was on HBO. It was pretty good. I think it got canceled already. There's this dude named Andrew Scott, who's just like Irish, like he's a couple of years older than us. He needs to be like the way he acted in His Dark Materials made me think he needs to be in future Star Wars, like as, I don't know if it's like necessarily a bad guy, like just because of his accent, he would be a great Imperial or whatever. But when I'm looking at the rest of his, what he's been in, he was in Fleabag, Sherlock.
Oh yeah, he's got a vibe to him for sure.
007 Spectre. But just like, he definitely seemed, he also has that thing where I'm like, this guy's clearly a good actor and he hasn't been in that much, which I think is like huge for Star Wars when like,
right.
It's not Brad Pitt, you know, like it's someone who's like has acting chops, but isn't like takes you out, you know?
The brother, Paul Mescal.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I had him on my, my possible list.
He could crush. Mm-hmm. I mean, him and, Kaylee, right? That was her name.
I would like to have very few white people. That's one of my things.
Well, he's Irish. And she's possible. American from Missouri. So that doesn't work for your casting.
Okay. So, I mean, I think these are all pretty, I'm going to comb through Discord and, it seems that, it seems that people are slightly into us. So now we're going to do what we normally do, which is we will put on social media all four of these pitches with a brief summary. So maybe we all have to text each other a 2-line summary.
Or we'll do titles. Yeah.
And then make people pick.
Subheadings, yeah.
And then what we'll do from there is take the pitch and we will tag Star Wars official accounts so that they can block all of us and they'll never have to hear from us again. So we could do that. But I think all these, like, they're all, I think, here's what I think. It's interesting enough that all four of our pitches, I feel like, represented our personalities in a way.
Yeah.
That Ryan went to this, like, super heavy, gritty, borderline crime drama. Yeah. And then, you know, Adam's got this like philosophical story. And then Nick's got this full on, like I'm
Mandalorian centric,
Mando centric, like all the things we love about new Star Wars.
I'm just trying to make money for Disney, man.
Yeah. Mando centric, Grogu loving.
Right.
Continuation.
We might get like an expanded Galaxy's Edge if Star Wars does really well. I'm just thinking dollar signs.
Yeah, and that's what we want. We finally want to be able to open up that bar up at the top of Ogus Cantina to expand it. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be in your movie, Nick. I can believe it.
Yeah, already. You know,
but mine being an ADD fest of popcorn and you know, I think it's good. It's
love it. It'll be in the movie first, but the entire new Star Wars land will be built, and it will open up the same weekend as the movie.
Wow,
I've got it all planned.
This is just merchandising, baby. This is how we do these things. Get Iger on the phone.
Aren't they opening a third Harry Potter? They're opening a third Harry Potter land.
Where?
It's gonna be Paris. It's gonna be from Fantastic Beasts, and it's gonna have like legit Paris, France landmarks, like restaurants and the Eiffel Tower and all the stuff in the park. It's going to be crazy. And we only get one? Come on.
Yeah.
Step it up.
Nick and I were talking about this. We talked about it on the pod before. As far as I'm concerned, there's nothing stopping Disney from opening up a different kind of cantina
in every large city.
A dozen cities around the world. Not just doing Ogas again, but like a different planet each time. It would crush. It'd be like Planet Hollywood or Hard Rock, but better. It would crush in every city and would just make people want to come to Galaxy's Edge even more. Mm-hmm. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. Let's get it. Let's get out there.
I don't know why they hate money so much.
Cantina / restaurant.
Well, you know what? Between these movies and the cantinas, we will figure out how to be able to do both. So all in all, we'll make Yeah, I don't know. Let's make the patrons decide. Let's make our Instagram decide, and let's do what we can to get to that 1,000 subscribers. What are we doing?
Press it, smash it, kick it.
Yeah, we're just hovering right below it.
Oh, it's horrible.
I mean, we hit 1,000, you get like the YouTube plaque. It says 1,000 subscribers. It's now you don't get that.
Right. They send you one that's this big. It's like a pin.
It's a letter in the
mail.
But
it's got a tiny frame around it.
It's a letter in the mail. It's printed in black and white.
No, they can't afford the paper for 1,000 subscribers.
That's true.
Subscribers.
Not worth it.
All right, so that's our episode.
That was a nice Freudian slip. They can't afford the paper for 1,000 subscribers.
All right. Hopefully next week we'll be on schedule again. We'll have a podcast. We won't totally blow it. I'm sorry for touring and stuff.
Oh. I think that you said you're off on Monday. So I believe we will be streaming on Monday.
That sounds correct.
Okay.
I know I put that in my calendar, so maybe we're just putting that out there now.
Pizza Beard Party says, I'll plank on top of the Falcon in Batuu if you hit 2,000 subscribers.
Woo!
So Jake is willing to get kicked out.
He knows it's not going to happen. That's why he's saying that.
All right. Okay.
Or he's just a bold-ass dude.
I like that. He's willing to get kicked out of Disney permanently after that 2,000 subscribers.
All right.
Well, patrons, vote Star Wars Scavengers.
Team Hottie or whatever.
I want to win. I never win. I want to win.
You get close. Darth Jar Jar is a good pick.
Yeah.
Let's just let democracy do its thing. You know what I mean? We'll put up the poll. We'll read the results next week when we talk about whatever we figure out we're going to talk about next week.
Too much politics, dude.
Too much politics.
I say we don't stream anymore until we get 1,000 subscribers. I'm willing to play hardball.
Oh,
hiatus. I like that.
I'm willing to just
play chicken.
No more podcast. Yep, exactly.
1,000 subscribers are death.
Cancel the Story of the Year show tomorrow unless everyone's standing in line.
I'll straight up go get a job at Target.
That's, honestly, that's the quickest way to find all the Black series that you've been looking for. Something to think about. Okay. All right. Love you, bros.
Love you, dudes. Everybody, thanks for listening and watching. Press the button. Tell your mom to press the button. Tell everybody to press the button. This is the one that says subscribe. Do it. Please do it. And until next time, when we have 1,000 subscribers, may the Force be with you. If you enjoy Thank the Maker, you can support us by following and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Or you can support us directly at patreon.com/thankthemakerpod. where you can get access to our Discord server, exclusive content, exclusive merch, our recording live stream, and more. Our patrons quite literally make Thank the Maker possible.